Woo, that's a raw. That's just raw. Man, Zach came with it. Welcome back to the Grapevine. I'm your host, Manan Sabir, and that was a fire. That was a fire conversation. I mean, when you talk about childhood obesity, you start to realize that, and especially in a country like this, it's a real thing. So I'm gonna start with this hour. I'm gonna start with a person I've been known for a while. Sabir Shapiro, what's up?
How you doing, good brother?
Man, I'm doing good. We got a lot to talk about, man.
Man, thank you for having me on here, man. I appreciate it, man. You've been doing great work, so thank you for having me.
Man, I appreciate you too, and I really appreciate the love that you have given me over the years, and that sustained me in a lot of ways. So, thank you. You are
man. Look, brother, I appreciate that. Likewise.
I wanted to talk about a few things. I know we have a conversation that is going to come out in this conversation. Who were you before music?
Wow. That's an interesting question. I've never been asked that question before. Before I get into that, I just want to make a slight, I want to say something before, when you was introducing me before and bringing me on. You were prophesizing and you were speaking it into existence. I'm Grammy nominated. We didn't bring home the win this year. We lost to Leon Thomas, but I'm a Grammy nominated songwriter. So I don't want people to, you know, say, wait a minute, he talking about he won a Grammy? No, we were nominated and we lost out to Leon Thomas and Mutt. We were nominated for the best R&B album of the year. So, oh, man. With Coco Jones.
Coco Jones album was fire.
Yeah, she had a great debut album. But to answer your question, who was I before the music? I mean, that's a great question. And if I just have to, you know, my earliest memories of who I was a young black boy, you know, and I think that stands out because of the path that I had to take in terms of my education. You know, I don't know if people remember, but back in the 70s, there was a busing program called Chapter 220.
Yeah.
And I was a Chapter 220 student, you know. So some of my earliest memories is just remembering being the only black kid in my class. So, you know, and being bussed out, having to wake up at, you know, 5:45, 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I could be ready to be on the bus stop by 6:15 to take an hour and 15-minute bus ride, you know what I'm saying, to start school by 7:30 or 8 o'clock, whatever the case may be. So just remembering that my color separated me from who I was around and how, you know, the comments and the different things I had to deal with due to my color, you know, made me realize who I was at a very, very young age. So I was a young black boy trying to find my way.
What type of struggles did that cause? And would you, if you had to do it again, would you not?
Well, it's interesting. You know, kids are resilient. So when we're kids, we don't really understand the magnitude maybe of situations, mm-hmm. or the gravity of situations. So, you know, the actual experience, would I do it again, knowing what I know now? Yes. You know, I would do it because I do think that the reasons why I was sent to those schools was because my mother had her very best intention of I want you to get the best education.
Yeah.
And you know how we are. And especially back in the 70s, you know, if it's white ice, it's colder.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If it's white water, it's wetter.
Yeah.
So I'm sure her mindset was, if I send him to school with these white people, he'll get a better education. And, you know, to a great extent, you know, I do see the benefits, you mm-hmm. know, because at an early age, I had to interact with that culture and deal with the issues that if you were, you know, going to school in our neighborhood where I live, you had a whole nother set of issues to deal with that wasn't like that. So,
yeah,
I would do it over. But I honestly do feel like I would have enjoyed either experience too.
Who believed in your gift first? Because it's easy to, I guess, go to those schools, and there are people who probably have lost themselves, right? But in your case, your mom being a strong woman, from what I know, being a strong woman, and you coming back home and like, listen, this is what the channel gonna be. We're gonna leave it on this channel, right?
Right, right.
Who believed in your gift first?
Okay. I would say me.
Mm.
You know, ever since I was little, bro, we grew up, it was competitive. You know, we played outside.
Yeah.
You know, we was at the playground.
Mm-hmm.
If you weren't good, you didn't get on the court.
Yeah.
Simple as that. You couldn't go home and cry and tell your mama. You couldn't do none of that. You just had to go get better.
Right.
So, you know, I've always started off just wanting it. You know, and fortunately, I've always had both of my parents' support. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents will be having their 60th wedding anniversary on July 9th.
Man.
And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I just got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah.
But you know, honestly, like it was a combination, because my dad was there as far as physically getting me to where I needed to go, where I needed to be every practice, every game, every camp,
yeah,
every workout when I'm, you know, all of that stuff.
Yep.
You know, and then my mama, she kept my hair right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? She kept my hair right. She was the one who said, you know, I don't care what you do with that basketball, because I had a scholarship to play basketball out of high school.
Really?
She said, I don't care what you do with that basketball, just make sure you get them papers.
Yeah.
You know, get that degree. You know, so that was her. So my parents equally believed in me, you know, and then my sister and my brother did too. You know, I wanted to be like my brother. That's why I played basketball. That's how I got into music.
Right.
So I had that in-house, you know, support, and I was the youngest, so, you know, there's some perks that come with that. Everybody, you know, that's the baby, and they all root for the baby at certain times. So I had a lot of in-house support.
Yeah, being the baby, man, it's always the perks, but always the challenges too, because, you know, that first one, that they always get the, you know, the first of everything, and then that last one, she always has to make do. But you know, a lot of times, like, I was the youngest for about 8 years, and I was aggressive, man. Like, I was, you couldn't tell me nothing, but it made for a great life, because, you know, I think my aggression helped me strive in many formats, many journeys, and that other people probably would have fell down in. So mm-hmm. in your life with your brother, did he take you under his wing?
Hell, can we cuss on here?
No, not much. But
okay. Because I almost cussed and I didn't want to cuss. Hell no. He here's the thing. See, and it wasn't his fault, you know, but he's 7 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable. Right. You know, by the time I'm 7, he's 14. So he's into girls and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But the thing that was cool was, I was a little brother who just ran behind him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched everything he did. You know, I'm digging through his drawers to find whatever. I don't even know what I'm looking for, you know? And then I come across, that's where I came across my first rap at, was in his drawer, in his top drawer. And I pulled it out and read it, and lost my mind. And, you know, his favorite person was, or favorite player was George Gervin.
Yeah.
Now, my favorite player was Magic Johnson, right?
Uh-huh.
But in high school, because of my brother, I wore number 44 because of George Gervin. So it was just always one of those things where, you know, he taught me how to talk to girls and, you know, taught me how to, you know, play basketball. And then it was like I was going to school with a Buddhist monk who was teaching me about music. You know, he's like a wealth of just knowledge and just music all across the board. So that was, you know, the role he played. And, you know, all them first rap albums and going back before, I always tell people, we remember when it wasn't no rap.
Yeah.
You know, so even going back before rap, when Cameo and Earth, Wind & Fire and Stevie Wonder and all of that.
Yeah.
You know, he had all of those albums. And yeah, so that's the role he played. Just giving me something to look to say, I like that. You know, I want to do that. You know,
right.
So that's the role he played.
What was the first rap that you, that when you pulled that out, what was the first rap?
The one that I found in his drawer?
Yeah.
He said, look, they had a hook and everything. It was nice. This was like, I would say 1980. We lived across the street from Green Bay Elementary School on 7th and Abert, right off of 7th and Capitol.
Yep, by Mesmer, yep.
And, yep. And he said, I'm the T, the O, the N. Why? I'm the guy with the private eye. I could make you scream. I could make you dance. I could make the young ladies come out their pants. And I, when I saw that part, I'm 7 years old. When I saw that part, I lost my mind. And then he had a little hook called We Want to Move You, and he had a little song that went on it, We Want to Take You to Another World. Like it was a hit. It's still a hit to me right now to this day. So I know he'd trip out if he heard this story, but yeah, that was it, bro. That was the moment. And then, like, it was that moment, and I know you didn't ask me this, but the real big moment that got me into, like, hip-hop,
yeah,
was these three dudes came up to Green Bay Elementary.
Yeah.
And they brought a big boom box up there and they stood in a line, bro. And they got to, like, popping and waving. And we had never seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, so all of that happened at the same time, you know? Yeah.
Hey, y'all.
And that's what.
Hey, we gonna come back. We're gonna come back to that story in a minute. Cause I got questions how that relates to your songwriting. You're on the Grapevine with Manon Sabir, and we'll be right back with Sabir Shapiro. Yes. Now we're back with Sabir Shapiro on the Grapevine, and in our truth, and I'm your host, Manon Sabir. You're in the Truth Radio Station 101.7. Listen, this is great. I'm excited. So Sabir, when you were in the you know, experiencing the pop locking, and when you were experiencing the pop locking and the boombox going off and cats, you know, they was doing their thing, and I'm sure it was probably some guys like huh rapping to be like huh.
That's how they all rap, yeah.
did they
yeah.
what was the feeling that came out of all of that? Because you ultimately went on to become a songwriter. We're just gonna put it out there. But you had to go through a process, right?
Definitely.
Tell me about the process.
So, I mean, when you say what came out of that, now see, once again, you know, we're going back to the, by the time hip hop had reached Milwaukee,
yeah,
we're looking at like 83, and it still wasn't there. Like 83, though, it floated through, and maybe 82, up in between 80 and 83, up in there, and Rapper's Delight with the Sugar Hill Gang came out, and,
You know, then Curtis Blow had the Christmas rap, and then, you know, Run DMC. And but the thing was, it was just being sprinkled. You understand? It wasn't saturated. It wasn't like you could just go to the radio and turn on the radio and just rap music is on. Nah, that didn't happen until the 90s. So to answer your question, when we first, and you got to remember, there was no rap before rap. So we're witnessing something new come onto the scene. And for the first time, what came over me was, these dudes is so damn cool. Like, they just like, how did you get that cool? You know what I'm saying? Like, I remember seeing other cool dudes before rapping. You was cool if you had the cool bike and you had the cool, you know, some, I don't know, the headbands and wristbands and jackets and karate shoes. It was different stuff that made you cool, right? If you knew how to work nunchucks, you know, all of that made you cool. But when these dudes came, they was talking and the music was going and people was, and it was like, it was like, it seemed like how I want that kind of power. That's the best way to explain it. I want to be able, I got something to say that y'all go like I could do that. Like, that's the thing that came over me, and I couldn't, man, I went home and wrote my first rap immediately. Immediately.
What was that rap?
It was called Salary Increase. And I was on that out the gate. I just that's crazy. It was called Salary Increase. It was called Salary Increase, man.
You remember?
I said something like my salary, I think I said my salary increases year after year. When you keep a fresh salary, you keep fresh gear. Something I said, you know,
it's still relevant to today.
But yeah, like that was the feeling that came over me. Like, I gotta go home and do this, you know? I gotta go home and do this, you know?
So,
And then that just kept building. I'm sorry, go ahead.
nah, you good, you good. So when you're writing songs and you like put all these processes together, like you find your brother's rap, you know what I'm saying, TONY, and then you find, you know, you start writing this, you know, rap, and you put all this together. You get to high school, college. Are you still writing?
I never stopped, bro. You know, like when I got to high school, I don't know if you remember Damon Key that used to play for Marquette. His brother, Lil Bit, his name is James Key. He got a brother the same size as Damon. He went to high school with me. James, freshman year. See, and this was the thing. Freestyle game was off the chain. Like, all we did was freestyle. That's all we did. We didn't have studios everywhere. It was probably one or two dudes in the city that would have a studio back then. You know what I'm saying? And you didn't really know those cats. But we mastering the beatbox. And now we on the city bus and we battling from 16th and Capitol, where I get on, all the way out. I got to ride out to 124th to Highway 100. We battling. Or when I'm in high school and I'm going to Dominican, now I got to go east on Capitol. I'm battling all the way from 16th and Capitol up to Oakland, back over to Bayshore on the bus, you know. And it was just that compet. Or after the basketball games, all the teams back then, all the players would go to Rocky Rococo's. I'm taking heads off up in Rocky Rococo's all back then.
On
So
your
it
squad
never
and they
stopped.
squad.
Man, whoever come into Rocky Rococo's getting it. Period. Period. Especially back then, I wanted the smoke. Like, you know, I didn't even understand what battling meant. You know, I just was here to just destroy you. You know, it was, I didn't even know the strategics behind what you should be doing. And no, I just know I'm coming off the top of my head and I'm looking at what you're wearing. I'm gonna rib you in this. I'm gonna say something about your girl. I'm gonna say that girl like me. Like, just, I was just so into it, bro. You know, it just, I was obsessed with it. So yeah, it was one of those things.
What, so when you write and you put all this together, when you write your songs, is it the lyrics first then? Are you coming up with the lyrics? Are you saying, man, this is, you know, these are the words, and then you put the melody in there, emotion? What, how does that work? What's the process?
I would say 90% of the time. And to me, writing raps is different than writing songs. I love writing songs. Writing raps, I think, it can be a little overcomplicated because you got so many things to worry about.
Yeah.
Just because of the culture. You know, for me at least, when I write songs, I feel a little bit more free.
Yeah.
But usually with me, the lyrics come first. Like, mm-hmm. I'll hear something in my head. You know, like I just wrote a song the other day called Step Brother.
Yeah.
And the whole song, the concept came to me because, I wish I could share my screen and rock it for you right quick, but the concept came to me because I had to call one of my guys in Chicago about doing some work down there, bringing some kids down to his museum that he got down there, taking them on a field trip around the city and showing them where Chief Keef and them record and
right.
Old Block and just the stuff these little kids is interested in.
Yep.
And
shout out to Chief Keef.
I hadn't talked to the brother
your
in a minute.
Guy. Yep.
Yeah. That's one of our artists. But yep. I haven't talked to the brother in a minute. And I met him through one of my other Muslim brothers, through a good brother.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, how do I call Merk and talk to him about this? I ain't talked to him. And how should I step to him? I said, well, I know him through my brother. And I said, he liked my brother. So I stepped to him like a brother.
Yeah.
Which made me think of the song Step Brother, which made me write the song Step to Me Like a Brother. You know, I wish I could share my screen and play it for you because it's coming up in the movie next month. But so, yeah, I usually come up with lyrics or concept.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's the key ingredient to a great song. I think I try to make good songs. People make them hits. We make them good. The people make them a hit. So I just try to have good concepts.
Yeah.
That's going to grow and age well if I look back 10, 15, 20 years from now.
When you were writing Coco Jones's album, what state of mind were you in when you were writing that? And what was going on in your life?
The time that I went in and worked with Coco Jones was really a pivotal moment because what I had been doing up until then was I had been working with an actress by the name Bella Thorne.
Yep.
And the way I got into that position is my close brother who manages, he's been Chief Keef manager from the beginning. Once he signed Bella Thorne, you know, he called me when he had Chief Keef and said, bro, I got this new artist from Chicago. You want to come help out? Ooh. And that wasn't really my lane. And I just had a kid and I was making other moves and so I passed up on that.
Yeah.
But then some years passed and he signed Bella Thorne.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a Disney star. She's a movie, you know, actress.
Yep.
And when he brought me into that, I told him, yeah, I'll help you manage her if I can write for her because she wanted to do rap music.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, man, come teach her how to rap. So that put me in the circle.
Yeah.
Because she was a movie star. And the movie stars know all the actors, actresses, athletes, and singers.
Right.
So between being with Chief Keef and Bella Thorne, that put me in the room with everybody you could think of.
Wow.
You know, and then I linked up. Yeah, I was fortunate enough. It's a phenomenal artist. She's a writer. Her name is Midian Mathers.
Mm.
She got a few Grammys off of writing on Beyonce's Lemonade. And me and her met. She came over to our studio to work one day.
Yeah.
And I went in and started working with her, man. And we clicked. And that's what brought me into the Coco situation because I worked with Midi on so much of her material and so many of her projects and songs that she was putting out there with other artists. So that was the pivotal moment right there. That's where it changed everything.
Hey, y'all, when we come back, we're going to ask Sabir Shapiro about health and how music changes the soul. When we come right back to the Grapevine. Yes. And now we're back.
Yeah.
We're back. Man, I cannot.
That's Sosa right there.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's one of my favorite Chief Keef joints. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Shout out to Chief Keef.
Yeah.
Where you at, Chief Keef? Call in 833-212-1017. 833-212-1017. Chief Keef, call in.
That's right.
Man, we gonna call him out. He in Chicago anyway. No, I'm just kidding. Well, so when you were writing just real quick, when you're writing Coco Jones' album, this is The Other Side of Love, am I right?
Well, the song that I wrote is called Other Side of Love, that I wrote with Midi and Coco. I wrote the second verse on that song, and the name of her it was on her debut album called Why Not More.
Right. What did when you went into those conversations, how did you tap into like her emotional wavelength, her emotional frequency?
You know what? That's a great question. First of all, Coco, the only thing that is more beautiful than her physical appearance, because she's a beautiful young lady,
yeah,
is her personality.
Mm. And that's what matters. Yep.
She is an absolute sweetheart, okay?
Mm.
And, you know, Coco is like 27 or 28 now. When I worked with Coco, she was 22.
Oh,
we
wow.
We did this song back in 01.
Yeah.
Not 01, 21, I'm sorry.
Mm.
We did the song back in 21, so she hadn't even ventured out on her. Like, she was doing songs and doing music and releasing singles and doing stuff for Disney, because she was a Disney star too.
Yeah.
But she hadn't made her first LP or EP or album or anything. So, you know, the way that whole incident happened was, my homegirl who I was telling you about, Midi,
mm-hmm.
she was in the studio with Coco. Now, me and Midi have been cooking up stuff for Beyonce, Rihanna. I mean, we're working. She's connected to everybody. So, you know, we're cutting songs to send to these artists, right?
Right.
So Midi's manager called her and said she wanted her to come in and work with Coco. And Midi said, okay, cool. So Midi went in and was working with Coco.
Right.
And they did, on the song Other Side of Love, they did the first verse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know why I can't get your love out of my mind. It's like
y'all, we lost Sabir. Sabir, we're going to try to reconnect this virtual world. That means we need to have you in the studio. Let's get you back. Hey, y'all, that was getting fire. That was getting fire. That was going very, very well. We're trying to get Sabir Shapiro back. So hopefully.
Hey, bro, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. We're good. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know where it cut off.
Where Midi, you were talking about just getting out of your mind. You were talking about, it was the lyrics talking about mind.
Yeah, they had written the first verse, mm-hmm. and they got stuck.
Yeah.
And Midi called me and she was like, Sabir, you know, what are you doing? Midi gave me a nickname, because when I was writing with her, she'd be like, oh my God, those is bars. Like, I'll give her a line. She'd be like, oh, those is bars.
Yeah.
So once I gave her a line, she's like, your name is Young Barcelona. That's your name, Barcelona. So she called me and she's like,
that's fire.
Yeah, I know, that was hard, right? Mm-hmm. So she called me, she said, Barcelona, what you doing? And I was at Bella's house just watching TV. I said, just watching TV over at B House. And she said, I'm in the studio with Coco Jones. You know who that is? I was like, nah. She was like, look her up on IG. And man, just come down. We're working on a song and we're on the second verse. We're sort of stuck.
Yeah.
You feel like coming through? So I was like, cool. So I slid, went in. They was just kicking and talking and they put the song on.
Yeah.
And I told them, let it run. And they ran, and then, you know, I'm talking to Coco, where are you from? How old are you? Her name is Courtney. So I said, can I call you Courtney? And she said, I don't mind. Sweetheart, both of her parents, her father was a professional football player. So I'm talking to her so I could get to know her.
Right.
To try to see, to get a feel for what kind of person she is. And she's a church girl.
Mm.
Like, in my opinion, I wish they, in my, like, she should be our next Whitney Houston if they roll her out the right way.
Wow.
Okay. But she's a church girl. So when I'm listening to the music and I'm talking to her, I say, okay, I got it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you got your, I was like, yep, let's go. So I went in and they played it. And I said, you know, I put some little dramatic with it. And I said, I wasn't looking for love. I know what it does. I had enough. I'm not giving up. I know I try, but I can't run and hide. So I'm patient with us. Sabir means patient.
Yeah.
Other side of love is bigger than us. I freestyled it right there on the spot.
Yeah.
Coco went in there. She sang it back, and the rest was history. Next thing we know, Alicia Keys was doing the remix.
What?
So, yeah, that's how that worked out.
That's wild. It's always, it's always that. And do you feel like when you go into this music world that you're working, and all of us are partaking in this, but do you feel like you're working to heal the community?
Wow. You know, this may sound selfish, but indirectly, I be trying to heal myself.
Damn.
And in that healing,
I feel you.
If somebody else can, if somebody else can get healed, you know, and that's another reason why I like writing songs more. You know, rap got so much bravado. That's what separates spoken word poetry, because that has that vulnerability where you can tap into your feelings. You can't really do that over a hardcore beat and translate it into sales. You know, so yeah, I a lot of, especially what I'm working on now. Like, I'm working on this project for this movie right now, and especially because it's a movie that's dealing with the Black community. And, you know, it's called Relative. It's called Relative Roulette. It's like Russian roulette, but with family. So it's all of these dynamics that's going on in the Black community, and it's written by a Black writer, and it's and directed by a Black director and a Black producer out of Philadelphia. And they want me, they've had me score this movie and write songs that's really dealing with, I feel like I'm on some space age, like I'm on my Marvin Gaye right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like what's going on, and Mercy Mercy, like it's all in that wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Where, and that's cool with me, because I'm not, I can't do the surface superficial. I got this, I got that, I shot everybody, I got all the money, all the women like me. It's only so far you can, to me, you can go with that.
Right.
But when you talk about the socio ills and the socio economics and the socio political and all of the different issues that's going on, especially with us in this day and age as Black people,
yeah,
I could write forever about that, you know?
If you could, if you didn't wake up, if you, you and I had a conversation earlier, and a lot of us are going through what we see in the entertainment industry as kind of a catharsis of health. And a lot of our young writers, also artists, have been taken over by either the health bug and or the unhealthy bug. You know, they're going out, it's like late nights, Percocets, you know, the whole nine. I know, and that becomes a culture. But your culture is completely different, especially as a songwriter. What are you doing to take care of yourself and maintain your health?
Stop living in LA.
Yeah.
And I'm being dead serious, because it's a twofold thing, because it on is. One hand, you can live in LA.
Yeah.
You can live in LA and they got the healthiest food.
Yeah.
And it's on the go. Like, there's a McDonald's and a Popeyes on every corner back in the Midwest.
Yeah.
There's health spots. They got really good food out there.
Yeah.
You know? But now you have to factor in the other things. And what I meant by that was, okay, the life I live, if I'm out there, now I gotta be at, well, I don't have to be, but I'm at events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at parties.
Yeah.
Everything out there make you feel like you have to be there.
Right.
You know, like just even with the Grammys, this last Grammys we was at, I made an intentional act on myself to, after the Grammys, and you're the first person I told this in public.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, oh, we got to go to the parties, and we got to go to the party. And my manager got me a room at the Beverly Hills Hotel, because that's where the biggest after party is. And Lauryn Hill and Justin Bieber and everybody came, and my daughter and my nephew was there. And I, you know, I brought them out with me. I got them in the party, bro, I went back upstairs to my room. I'm talking about Jamie Foxx. Everybody was at this party. I went back up to my room and watched old episodes of Dallas on YouTube and ordered room service. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm on my Dave Chappelle, you know, ish. I'm on my, like, the industry is not, I'm not a, I don't ride, I don't, you know, I'm not doing none of that, you
Right.
know? And you know what I'm saying? And these are just people out here. You know what I'm saying? And I don't even want to get caught up because when you get in that wave, you know, I am who I am, but these celebrities or these producers or writers, whoever they may be, they all got egos, man. They all think they the, they, you know, and I don't want to be around that. I'm a down to earth cat. That's why me and you cool. I like to chop it up with people that's down to earth, real. Ain't no big eyes and little U's. You know, I ain't with all of that. So, and out of there, you know. And I try to get my walking in. And like I told you earlier today, man, my juicer came, got dropped off today from. So I've always, you know, I fall off. My weight will fluctuate. I'll do really great. Then I think I got it together, and you know, you learn it's a lifestyle, bro, and discipline. You know better than anybody. That's why I called you, telling you I need you to put me a regimen together, you know?
And y'all, when we come back, we're gonna get into that regimen. We're gonna get into juicing. We're gonna get into what makes Sabir a healthy individual and what's gonna maintain him for the rest of his life. You're in the Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir. Let's come right back.
That's my girl right there.
Man, that song right there, man. You do all this. Your journey is mighty, and you're taking care of yourself. You're looking to take care of yourself, and you and I had a discussion earlier. What do you think are your questions about juicing? Because you said something which is profound earlier, I think, while we were on the phone. And you don't just want to live to be just live. You want to live a long, healthy life, pretty much. And I know that that's important. And earlier I had mentioned I have an aunt that's 102, and she looks like she about 70, early, like late 70s. I mean, just tall, vibrant. Like, she got a long ways to go. She's not gonna, it's not gonna end for a while for her. But you're now, you bought a juicer and you're like, you know what? Time to take this to the next level. And I know there's a correlation between being healthy and not just songwriting, but thinking too. Because when you're healthy, you can think at such a high level that, and also manifest things at such a rate that people start to look at you like you're magical. And
Yeah, like you got a cheat code.
That you got a cheat code. Yep. And so now we're on the discussion of juicing. You had a few questions. I so we can actually tackle some of those questions now.
Yeah, well, the thing is it's a couple of things that you just said
Yeah.
that made me pause and think. Like, one of the things that I do, like, I need to get my diet together.
Yeah.
Okay. Like when we was talking earlier, I said, you don't know no old obese people.
Yeah.
You don't know no fat people in their seven or obese people in their 70s and 80s.
Right.
Really, you don't know them in their 60s,
Yeah.
okay? So I want to get my diet together for all the obvious reasons, but the one thing that I do that I've started like maybe 8 years ago
Yeah.
that I think made all the difference in the world is I do get my meditation in. That's the game changer for me because it starts with how you think. you know, and to have, you know, we're so worried about our body, but our mental health,
yeah,
you know, and I try to, you know, one of my biggest things that I hate to see, and that I would hate to see happen to anyone, is people that lose their mind.
Yeah,
you know, and like they're in the stresses of life, and the anxiety is so much that your intelligence turns against you.
Yeah,
and so I try to stay on top of that. Meditation helps me stay centered. It helps me stay. I don't want to say it keeps me in alignment with where I want to go, even when I get out of alignment, because they give you different practices to tell you how to, you know, because we're not perfect and we'll have wrong thoughts and wrong things, but don't punish yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Face back in the direction that you intend on going, and, you know, keep on going in that direction. So that led up to, you know, I've been getting my 4 miles walking in every day, but I know my diet isn't right, you know? And that made me say, you know, I got a brother who ran a successful business in juicing.
Right.
And look at him, look at his body. He's healthy. He's muscles. He's active. His brother can flip, kick, do all kind of stuff. And, you know, I need to tighten up, you know, and I need to find a way that's sustainable for me. That's why I called you, because I want to find something that can help me have more energy, vitality, you know, clearer thinking.
Yep.
You know, look my best, let them shirts and stuff fall on you the right way, and your V and all that, you know. And I've never tried juicing, so I know a juicing master.
Yes.
So that's how we got to this point.
And I was
hoping you would put a protocol together for me.
I got you a protocol. It's a real protocol. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of times we feel like when we're juicing to take in a whole lot of juice because we're trying to stay away from starvation. And that's not the case. It's when you're juicing, if you take that out of your mind and you maintain this level of mental agility, mental toughness, when you're juicing, you can make it past any type of hiccup. I had a gentleman, this real quick, I had a gentleman who, shout out to Luke. He was about 420 and he wound up juicing and he lost about 200 pounds, close to two.
Wow.
And you know, it took him a while. It was a part of a challenge, but he really challenged himself, because after a while, you know, it was less the challenge and more of knowing that he had to live for his family. And he wound up keeping it off pretty much for the most part. I think some of it came back on because of just life. But when you're juicing, the main thing is to recognize that you don't have to juice as soon as you wake up. And you want your body to be in this state of autophagy, and also you also want your body, when you break that state of autophagy and your body's kind of feasting on ketones, then when you break it, you want to put something very nutritious in it. So it can be, and I'll put this together for you, but for the most part, we're just talking to folks, right? It can be like a smoothie. So you have a smoothie. Your smoothie can be, I don't know, kale, cucumbers, apple, hemp seeds, and freaking bananas. And then the rest of your day can be juices. And as we age, people in our contemporary ages, you have to do less fruit and more vegetables. So majority of your diet should be, you know, 90%, especially if you're juicing, 90% vegetables and 10% fruit. Now the 10% in terms of ratio in a juice has to be the fruit. So 10% fruit in the juice. If you're making a juice, if you're making a smoothie, same exact thing. And you don't always want a large scale variety, but you just want something that's really consistent across the board. You keep that in your refrigerator, and you just drink it as much as you possibly can. The other thing is.
Okay, that's the question I have, bro. That's the question I have.
Yeah.
With juicing, can I drink as much as I want?
With juicing, you can drink as you're going to get full, especially if you're out in Cali. They do have fresh farmers market. So if you are drinking nutritious vegetables and fruits, you're going to get full almost instantly. It's going to happen. So with those farmers market vegetables, it's going to be instant. So you're not, yes, you can drink as much as you possibly can first starting out, but your body is going to kind of rear back and you're going to learn, okay. And with your schedule, you're going to learn, okay, you know, I have to turn it on and turn it off. When you get used to turning it on and turning it off, you're going to find that there are specific periods of time throughout the day that you're going to crave that juice. And there's specific periods of time where you're going to be like, well, I can't do it. I'm walking 4 miles. I can't do it. That's an hour long, you know, however, hour and a half worth of walking. And then you just kind of keep that in your journal. So my thing is, because you're in a natural state, you want to provide yourself with listening to your body first, especially at this age.
Right.
And you already know what your body needs. So you probably are not a morning breakfast type of person. And if you are, it's not large.
Right. No, I can not break fast until afternoon.
Exactly. So your body is naturally telling you to not go into a food state, and it still wants to be in a fasting state. What destroys a person's diet is that their sugar levels drop, but then also their protein levels, they start craving protein. So yeah. Do you have, man, we gotta get on some more phone calls because we're running out of time. I don't know if you have more time after this, but we are running out of time. I cannot wait to talk to you. And I know I don't want to hold your schedule up, but if you, real quick, if you had to say one thing to a songwriter in Milwaukee, what would it be?
Don't wait on nobody and don't hate on nobody. Keep doing your work. Okay? The game will find you. Stay true to yourself and write what's true to you. I haven't listened to the radio in years, and when I do listen to music, I don't listen to nothing that was made after 2000. I don't want to sound like anyone. I don't want to talk about what anyone else is talking about. And if we do, I don't want to talk about it like they're talking about it. You know, so I think originality is the biggest thing. And it's so hard for people to be themselves in a world full of copycats. You know, but I guarantee you that thing that you do and you try that ain't nobody else doing, that's what's going to work.
Sabir Shapiro, thank you so much, brother. I really, really love you. I really appreciate you. And you're on the grapevine with your brother. You're more than welcome to come back. I'm going to call you right after we take these messages. And we're going to make sure we stay in contact.
Thank you for having me on, man.
Thank you for
definitely. Having me. Appreciate you, brother.
All right, my brother.